Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time sunset watcher.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that melds three different life stories and their respective perspectives into what we hope is a weekly comprehensible discussion of cinema. This week, we'll tackle the notion of perspective by discussing two films that tell their stories through the eyes of extremely different characters. The first is a New Mexico sheriff played by Joaquin Phoenix and writer-director Ari Aster's Eddington. Following that, we'll tackle Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, a film by first-time writer-director M. Beth Davids that centers on a character played by the 7-year-old South African actress Lexi Venter. Let's begin by heading to a small town in New Mexico. It's that town, Eddington, that writer-director Ari Aster uses as his film's title. His central character is Joe Cross, the county sheriff, played by Joaquin Phoenix, who finds himself at odds with just about everyone as he flouts public health mandates in the name of his own sense of personal freedom. Set in May 2020, Aster's film is still near the beginning of the COVID pandemic, and people, as most of us can recall, are afraid. But Sheriff Joe isn't. He's more resentful and angry. And when pushed, especially by the town's mayor, Ted Garcia, played by Pedro Pascal, he responds first by declaring his own candidacy for mayor, then resorting to passing on lies and half-truths, and finally taking out his fear and resentment in a far more extreme manner. But then, what can we expect, since the whole town is, much like the real world in which we live today, also riven by fear and resentment, fueled by police brutality, overt racism, the pandemic, and the conspiracy theories surrounding it, not to mention a religious movement led by a cult leader played by Austin Butler. And all of this is exacerbated by that contemporary hobgoblin social media. Aster, whose past work includes such films as Midsommar, Hereditary, and Beau is Afraid, knows how to create a sense of horror, particularly in how it applies to our innate vulnerabilities. Eddington follows the same thematic pattern. The problem, though, is that he tackles today's socio-political scene without any real larger meaning. And the last thing we need today, especially by an otherwise skilled filmmaker, is an exercise in horror that is little more than a study in nihilism.
Well, I don't know if I subscribe to that same idea that, you know, now is not the right time for a certain kind of movie, especially a nihilistic one. Because one, I think you could make that same argument going back in time with movies like Doctor Strangelove or MASH when they came out. And two,
movies that were comedies, I might point out, which were very different from what Ari Aster puts on the screen.
Eddington is
no,
a comedy.
No,
yes, it is.
No,
it's absolutely it's a satire.
No. Well, that's comedy. That is a form of comedy. You're just saying outright that it's not a comedy.
I'm saying I did not laugh except for once.
Okay, but that's not the point. It is a comedy. It's going for humor. And two, I think nihilism is a perfectly reasonable response to the state of things, especially when it feels like every attempt to improve things is thwarted and the bad guys keep winning. This might surprise you, though, because I think that the biggest sin of Eddington is that I didn't find Aster's approach all that involving or interesting this time around. So even though I'm defending it, I didn't like the movie very much. And I think that that central political thesis that, you know, everyone is actually kind of crazy when you think about it, and, you know, technology has really rotted everyone's brains, that doesn't really appeal to me very much, whether or not it's true. And I also think if you're going to invoke very real issues that are still with us, like COVID, like religious indoctrination, like the murder of George Floyd, I think you better have something to say about them, because otherwise it feels like you're exploiting them for provocation.
Yeah, you're just making my point.
No, I don't know if I'm making my point, because the fact is this movie is still a comedy, whether you think it's funny or not. And I didn't think it was very funny either. But I think a lot of this movie is provocation and kind of empty provocation. And it's designed to push your buttons. I mean, we're already kind of heated in this this conversation.
No, kidding.
And so if you hate the movie, then you're a sucker and you fell for it. And as I was watching Eddington, I did mostly hate it. As the days have gone on, I have cooled down on it a little bit, and some of its good qualities have risen to the top. I mean, Aster is doing so much in this movie, and he is such a talented craftsman that he's bound to do something right. And it's possible that we're just still too close to this stuff and that maybe I, as a viewer, can't see the forest for the trees. I would not be surprised if I were to revisit this in a decade or 15 years from now, or let's go even further, as far back as when MASH came out as today, and maybe it would work better for me. So there is my extremely confused reaction to this movie about very confused people and a movie that is trying to take the temperature on a very confused time. So I'm not really sure what to make of this, but suffice it all to say, I mean, this is a comedy. I don't know what else to tell you. Whether or not it's funny is one thing, but it's trying to be a comedy.
I'll go this halfway with you. It's an attempt at comedy.
Yes, yes,
go
that's ahead, what I'm MP. Saying.
No, there's a difference between an attempt and comedy. But go ahead, Impy, jump in.
No, I mean, the genre of this MP, movie is
jump
comedy.
In.
Uh-oh. Ooh. I'm a little nervous here.
yeah.
My well, problem like is I went into us. This movie looking at Astor's past work, so Hereditary in particular, Midsommar, and then a movie that I liked a lot, Beau is Afraid.
Me too.
I guess I expected something more or different from him in this because he had an interesting central premise. And Nathan, I might agree with you. Maybe it's too soon. I mean, it was 5 years ago to look back on, you know, the appearance of COVID and everything and the divides that wrought. But then he does too many things at once. He's trying to put all this sort of contemporary current events perspective into this little town. And there's this like company that's trying to take over. And we don't
cliche.
Really get a good sense of what this energy something data center yep. is supposed to do.
Big tech.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so he has all these themes that are going on, but as a result of that, he can't really fully develop any of them. So you're just left with this feeling of like ongoing tension, but you're not exactly sure why.
Both you guys are giving him way too much credit. Look at his movies. I will agree with you. This guy is a skilled filmmaker.
Yeah.
I mean, the performances I have no fault with in the film.
Except what was Emma Stone doing in this? She did nothing.
Well, yeah, but that I think that's one of those kind of red herrings because you expect more from her and she gives you very little.
Right.
You expected more from Austin Butler, too, but
and then
he gives you very little. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that his movies have always been struck by he knows how to tap into our fears. And boy, I'll tell you what, nobody makes a better horror picture than he does. Here, he tries to do that with important sociopolitical topics, and he's like the gadfly. It's like, I'm not going to do anything more than I've done in these other movies, but I'm going to use all these contemporary references that people understand. And I got to tell you, 1.5 hours into going to sleep that night, I woke up in a panic attack, did not get any sleep, and it still hasn't worn off. Now, the one thing I will agree with you, Nathan, is that maybe in a while I'll be able to look back at this and go, oh, maybe there's some genius there. The way I did with other films, Goodfellas, for example, I did not like it when it first came out. Blue Velvet, I did not like it when it first came out. And later, then I went, whoa, these are works of genius. They're really artistry.
Blue Velvet is an interesting comparison with Eddington because, I mean, I think both of those movies are, again, like they're trying to get a rise out of you. They're trying to inspire heated discussions like the one we're having. Like that's in their DNA. I think ultimately, though, there's kind of a smugness to this movie that just sort of rubbed me the wrong
way.
Yeah,
I agree.
I will say, though, that the second half of Eddington, we haven't mentioned, I mean, it's an Ari Aster movie, so you can assume it's long. It's a 2.5 hour movie. It's not even the second half. It's more like the middle section, which is, I think, the best part of the movie. It becomes more of this kind of revisionist Western that he's been describing it as. And there is something inherently funny about the confrontation at high noon having to be socially distanced. That's funny. And then there is another confrontation between Cross and Garcia that is set to Katy Perry's Firework. That's funny.
I liked that stuff.
That makes
scene.
Me laugh. But I agree that he's deliberately biting off more than he can chew. That's the entire point of the movie is he's trying to make a film that feels like contemporary times. And contemporary times are media overload, and that's what he's doing. But I think maybe at a disservice to the story and the characters and the ultimate
point. I was kind of with it. I was willing to cut some slack here. But the last part of the movie, maybe the last quarter, you know, it kind of got overly violent, and I just didn't really know what they were trying to.
That's when it really jumped the shark.
Well, it reminded me of a movie that we talked about not that long ago, No Country for Old Men. It kind of felt
which I
like
had problems with.
Warmed, and I have no problems with No Country for Old Men, but I felt like it was kind of a rehash of that.
Another thing I'll take issue with you is when comparing it to Blue Velvet, Lynch's films are always waking dreams. You know you're in an alternative world here. Astor's film is reality. It has an authentic feel that these are real people. And that did not work for me.
And I wasn't comparing it like qualitatively to Blue Velvet, but I think he...
Thank you.
I will not grant you anything there. I'm just saying that I think that Astor is a really interesting filmmaker. I look forward to anything he does next. But when you say we're giving him too much credit, I don't agree. I think there is a lot of intention and thought behind this movie. Maybe too much thought behind the movie. Maybe that's the problem here. This is a divisive one.
But I'm I like the spirited discussion.
I like
must
it too.
Say.
Yeah, I like it too.
Okay.
Anyway, that was our argument around the movie Eddington.
Which, by the way, an argument, but we all mostly didn't like it. So make of that what you will.
This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to take a look at the intriguingly titled adapted memoir, Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Meet Spokane Public Radio at a farmer's market near you this summer. Grab some fresh local produce and stop by our booth to pick up SPR fans, window stickers, and station information. SPR staff, volunteers, and hosts will be in our community at farmers markets this summer. Visit the events section on SpokanePublicRadio.org to learn when and where you can meet us at the market.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Ari Aster's feature film, Eddington. Let's now turn to another film as seen from the perspective of a single character, this time a child played by the 7-year-old South African actress, Lexi Venter. Anyone interested in Africa is likely familiar with the several memoirs written by those expatriates, mostly white, about their lives in countries such as Kenya, South Africa, or the former Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe. The most famous is, of course, Out of Africa, which was written by the Danish writer Karen Blixen, whose pen name is Isaac Dennison. One that was published in 2001 is titled Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, and it details the childhood of its author, Alexandra Fuller, as the daughter of an expatriate English couple who tried to forge a life in what was, until 1980, called Rhodesia. It's that same year that the movie, which carries the same title as Fuller's memoir, is set. Written and directed by the actress-turned-filmmaker Embeth Davids, Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight is told through the eyes of 7-year-old Bobo, played by Lexi Venter. It details her family's turbulent life as they cope with memories of a sibling's death, the alcoholism of Bobo's mother, played by Davids herself, a long-fought civil war, and the 1980 election that would bring Robert Mugabe to power and spell the end of both the country's colonial power structure and the family's life on their ranch. Davids, a first-time filmmaker, deserves credit for finding a new way of telling an old story. Even more so, she pulls off a difficult acting job as a grieving, angry, troubled woman while directing young Venter into giving a moving performance far beyond her years.
The absolute highlight of this film is the performance of Lexi Venter. And the fact that Davids, the director, was able to find her at all is just almost miraculous, because apparently Davids, who actually did herself as a child grow up in South Africa, you know, had been eager to make this film for a long time. And of course, if you're going to center on a child, you have to find the right child. And apparently initially she had conceived of this as sort of a third person memoir. But when she shifted to making it, you know, telling the story through the eyes of the child, she had to find this child. And apparently, Davitz auditioned a number of child actors. And she found this girl on Facebook. She put out a Facebook call for her. And this child is, it's the most amazing kid performance maybe I've ever seen. And we've talked about several good ones over the years, most recently in the Florida Project.
But Sean Baker's Florida
yeah,
Project.
So this girl is living, you know, on this farm that looks pretty down at the mouth, you know, hard scrabble existence for the parents. And we know that they had some livestock, but we're not even sure really what's happening there. We know that they still have black servants. And so there's this tension because we know that in 1980, things are going to shift here. And the British colonists recognized that too, but they were hoping against hope that would not come to fruition. So again, the title, Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight, which apparently comes from another writer, is telling this story about racial tension, about transition, about colonialism, about, you know, sort of family life. And so Ventnor, as the child sort of protagonist and narrator, brings up all of these things that she doesn't quite understand. I mean, she sort of parrots these things that she hears from her parents, like all blacks are terrorists or they've turned into terrorists. And at one point she asked her mom, are we racist? And she says these things in such an innocent kind of voice that you know that she appreciates something is going on, but she can't quite figure it out. And part of the problem for her is that she has this really close relationship to one of the domestic workers in the house.
A woman named Sarah, who's played by the actress Zikona Bali.
Yeah, and she was great. And her partner, Jacob, who's obviously more involved in the, you know, governmental changes to come than maybe some other people in this show. But this Lexi, we first see her, I think, one of the very first scenes, we see her on this motorbike. So she's like 7 or 8 years old in the movie. We see her on this motorbike and she's got this rifle strapped to her back. At another point, she's smoking cigarettes. So she's sort of caught between this childhood that is amazingly sophisticated on the one hand, almost feral on the other hand. And, you know, her mother, we find out later that there had been a lot of tragedies in this family, or at least one notable tragedy. And so her mother is very troubled and hands off and spends most of her time half intoxicated or hungover. She also has an older sister who, at the beginning of this story, doesn't really play a big part. As a matter of fact, you're thinking, oh, you know, what's going on with her? And then we start to see she's caught between being a child and being a teenager and all of the problems that that brings to it or with it. But I think that we start to appreciate sort of what's happening behind the scenes in terms of this war, this coup d'etat, this revolution. I mean, it's going to be a democratically elected government that takes over from Mugabe in this particular era. But I think that, you know, we can see the classism, the colonialism, the racism, the sort of trauma of childhood, the grief associated with these individual characters. And this film had played at a number of film festivals before it opened in theaters, including the Palm Springs Film Festival. But now I want to go read the book because I thought the performance of Lexi Ventnor was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I don't think I'm as high on this movie, maybe as either of you. Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight. That's a title that you kind of have to like study in the mirror before you say it on mic. It made me think of a lot of other movies that are about politically fraught eras, but are told through a child's perspective. You know, I'm thinking of like Forbidden Games and Grave of the Fireflies and Pan's Labyrinth.
Anything Iranian.
Very true. Spirit of the Beehive is another one. Even Days of Heaven. I mean, she has this kind of whispery voiceover throughout the movie that definitely reminded me of that movie. And I do think that there is a big debt to Terrence Malick here. And I know I bring up Terrence Malick, it seems, on every show, but I think it's because a lot of filmmakers are indebted to him.
Well, at least when Dan doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's very true. And so speaking of the style, because I think that Davitz has a really good sense of style in this movie, it's an incredibly well-made film. I really appreciated sort of her focus on the pastoral elements of this because, I mean, if you look at this movie through a political lens, it's inherently flawed because it's from a little girl's perspective. And so therefore we get a very one-sided perspective of what's going on. And in, you know, an unenlightened perspective, although you're totally right, I also liked the scenes where she just flat out asked these questions that the adults either don't know how to answer or are very uncomfortable and don't want to answer. But I just like the way that she portrays the beauty of the land, her focus on the animals that are around these kids, the insects, the dogs, the chickens, the horses. I really appreciated all that. And I really liked her choice of music throughout it. There are a lot of songs by Roger Whittaker, who is a British musician who must have had, you know, some fame in South Africa. And then there's a really key moment set to a song by Rodriguez, who, if you've seen the documentary Searching for Sugar Man, you will know that Rodriguez blew up in South Africa in the 1970s right. and 80s, and nobody knew who he was or what happened to him. So I liked that little touch too. And again, I'll echo what you said about the performances. I mean, I agree that the little girl is really good. We've been talking about a lot of really good kid performances lately with Adolescence and even The Life of Chuck a couple weeks ago. But I think that Davitz as the mother, I think that's a really challenging part.
Yeah.
Without falling into histrionics or cliches, I think she does a really good job. So even though I just spent a lot of time praising the movie, I didn't have a lot of feeling for it, but I had a lot of admiration for it. And I think Davitz is a really good filmmaker. I'd like to see what she does next behind the camera.
Yeah. To me, the obvious parallel here is Sean Baker's The Florida Project with the actress Brooklyn Prince. I mean, she wasn't much older, I think roughly the same age,
yeah.
7-8 years old as Lexi Venter. And I think that the two films have a lot in common about children really left on their own. They're with troubled parents. In the Florida Project case, it's a single mother struggling to get by. And I think both of them are terrific films. I really appreciated a lot of what Davitz put on the screen. You know, and she tackles a whole lot of topics. It's not just the socio-political problems that were happening in Rhodesia, come Zimbabwe at the moment. But there was an aspect of adolescent sexual abuse also that's thrown in there. So she does a lot with very little. I was
And it's a relatively short impressed. Film. I mean, I thought it was very crisp, and I really liked the cinematography and the way that it was edited. So mm-hmm. I say across the board, big thumbs up.
Yep. That was our discussion of the Imbeth Davitz film Don't Let's Go to the Dogs Tonight. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed and discarded Ari Aster's polemic Eddington. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Till then, consider these words from the late, great George Carlin. Some people see the glass half full, others see it half empty. I see a glass that's twice as big as it needs to be. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.